Hey, fight fans. Welcome to another Caveman's Corner. We're coming to you from the Fan Doozy Studios in Buffalo, New York, with your host, Jeff.
Captain Caveman!
Denz. Today I have with me a real professional. What's going on, Dr. Kroll?
Not much. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Probably want to talk into the mic a little bit closer to your
Come
face
on,
there.
No, I'm not an audio guy. I don't know how this stuff works.
There we go. Now you're looking good.
Now I'm sounding better?
Yeah, you sound, I can actually hear you.
Good.
That's good.
That's good because the audience can hear me.
If they're listening still.
Right. Yeah, they might have already turned it off.
You're coming to the gym I train at, Western New York MMA, and you're putting on a little seminar. Can you tell us what's going to go on at this seminar?
Yeah, so what I'm doing is I'm just going to do an introduction to yoga for a lot of the athletes and anybody really else who wants to show up. So it's just a real basic yoga flow, and I'm going to do some advanced stuff near the end for anybody who wants to do it, so it'll be kind of cool. We'll go from transitions in certain positions up in the air, and it'll be kind of neat, but it'll be a lot of beginner stuff too, so anybody can come, and it'll just be, like I said, a real easy introduction for people.
Sounds like jiu-jitsu. Transitions, flying through the air.
Well, you know what? I mean, at the base, everything, whether it's jiu-jitsu or yoga or anything, is really just athletic movement. So the principles of athletic movement underlie every single skill that you want to do.
When are you doing this and what time?
So it'll be Saturday, June 3rd at 1:30 p.m. at Western New York MMA and Fitness on Great Arrow Drive. I think it's 255. I don't know the exact address.
255 Great Arrow.
There's
an awning outside that says Western New York MMA. Make sure you come in that door. There's also a Chinese kung fu place or something. They sell Chinese medicine, and they do, I don't know. I don't know how traditional it is, because my wife said it was kind of fake.
Oh, I have no idea.
It's all white people that run it.
Oh. Well, that doesn't mean it's not authentic.
I guess. My wife was a little put off. My wife is 100% Chinese from Hong Kong. She was a little put off by that place.
Hmm. Well, I mean, her opinion is more valid than mine on that.
I guess. I always thought like General Tao's was real Chinese until I got married. So what are the health benefits of yoga?
Well, it's just like any other activity in terms of when you're talking about just the physical side of it. So when most people, when they think of yoga, they think of only the movements and the postures and the breathing. That's it. They don't think of any of the other aspects of it. So if you just narrow it down to those two things, you're getting a lot of different muscle positioning, a lot of different stability and balance activity and work, and learning how to breathe and control a posture. But there's also a bunch of other components of yoga as well, if you're really talking about yoga in a more true form. I mean, and people debate about it all the time. But, you know, to have an advanced understanding of any position in yoga, it's not just about being able to hold the position and breathe appropriately. It's about having a clear mind and, you know, feeling one with the position per se. I don't want to get too deep on it or anything, but you know, there's a lot more to it than just getting into the pose and fighting it the whole time. It's a lot about your mental state and what you're thinking and the purpose of doing it. There's a deeper purpose than just, okay, I want to stretch a hip flexor, I want to stretch a glute. It's a lot more than that.
You sound almost like a hippie.
Kind of, and you know me long enough, I'm the furthest thing from a hippie. Yeah.
Namaste.
but no, there is a, you know, one of the things that I've told you in the time we've trained together is, you know, you being a performing athlete, you have a real good sense of what on is. You want to be performing at max level all the time. But to really define what a high-end position is, you have to be able to define what zero is, too. So you think of something like a corpse pose where you're really just shut down completely. That's zero. And sometimes that's harder for people to really get into and master than anything else. They can get into a handstand. They can get into a plank. They can get into a downward dog without a problem. But yet they can't relax and stay calm in a corpse pose. So it's about understanding both ends of the spectrum.
Okay, and who is the seminar open for?
Anybody who wants to go. So it's not a pay seminar, it's a donation seminar. So you're free to attend, and if you think it's a good seminar and you want to drop a few bucks in the donation bin, great. If you want to, you know, throw a middle finger my way, that's fine too if you think it's a bad seminar. But yeah, it'll be a good seminar, and I'm going to give out a coupon for my yoga studio in North Tonawanda. Anybody who goes to this seminar will get $20 off their first month of unlimited sessions. And I'm also going to put out a little thing for people to fill out in terms of a calendar, so I can try to narrow down what times are best for most people, so I can start offering classes at those times.
Awesome. I have some flyers out at the gym for you right now, too. So if you're at the gym right now, we can go up to the desk, and they're on the desk. There's a flyer for this seminar and Dr. Kroll's business card as well.
And you can go to my Facebook page at Kroll Physical Therapy or my website at KrollPhysicalTherapy.com and get all the information too.
Awesome. And why are you doing this? Did you just start a yoga studio or something?
Well, I started a yoga studio in April. And, you know, it's sort of like a soft opening thing. I didn't really advertise it too much. Just get a couple people in the door, work out some of the kinks and everything. And now I'm starting to promote it and push it a lot more, get more people in. And there we go. Just expose people to the product, honestly.
I was going to tell everybody how hard yoga is for me. Yeah, I mean, since you got the studio together, we've been up there a couple of times. I've done it. And I honestly think it's harder for me to do that than go through sometimes a fight team practice. I'm really fighting myself and a lot of the stuff you have me personally do.
Yeah, and, you know, I've known you long enough where I can really zero in on things that I know that you have problems with. So it's just like anything else. You study your opponent long enough, and you can zero in on their weaknesses. I know you well enough where I can zero in on areas that you're not good at.
Great, so you're focused on my weaknesses.
Absolutely.
I like it.
But if I don't challenge you, you don't get better. Nothing grows without a challenge.
Yeah, I'm not growing. I'm getting shrinking up.
Well, you're cutting weight for a fight, so. Yeah. Maybe a fight. Maybe.
Hopefully July 1st. You also talked about there can be some negative aspects to yoga as well if you're just checking it out and doing it from a DVD or not under great supervised care. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, one of the things is I'm going to keep going back to this point. It's just like anything else in terms of physicality. Everybody's got a dose limit for it. Some people can do all sorts of different things in terms of joint positioning or how long they can do it or how they can go through fatigue and not have a problem. But other people, they can't. So there's some people that go to a yoga in the park where they're just going through sun salutation over and over and over again. And very quickly, people are getting smoked. So you'll go down to like Buffalo Canal side and you'll see people. And by 15 minutes, they can't even ascend or descend into a plank anymore. So, you know, they probably shouldn't be doing that. So at that point, you set yourself up for injury, shoulder problems, low back problems, wrist and elbow problems. So it's just like anything else. If you go around through your jiu-jitsu class and you see people struggling with certain positions, they may need a break, or they may not be able to do that position anymore that day, or you might give them something else to do. Just because, you know, you're not training and you're not exercising, you're not doing the things you want to do if you're injured. So, and that's a problem with yoga. I see as many patients from yoga injuries as I do from CrossFit, jiu-jitsu, running, anything else, just because people overdose it. Just like they're running, they overdose it.
That's a little surprising. What kind of injuries do you get doing yoga?
A lot of shoulders. See a lot of shoulder problems. And again, it's people rushing through certain parts of the sun salutation or any other position, and the instructor doesn't catch it, or they're using a DVD which can't catch it, or a YouTube video, or they're practicing on their own and just not focusing on the real basic things. You know, it's kind of like you were telling me about you went to a Hicks and Gracie seminar, and he was talking about basics and basics and basics and make sure you got those down. It's the same thing. People don't want to work on the basics because they're not fun. But without those basics, it's really tough to do something advanced. And honestly, the basics is really all you need.
I would agree with that a lot. Actually, at this seminar, he talked 40 minutes just about breathing. He's a huge proponent for yoga as well. And that kind of got me interested in a little bit more than you're doing yoga. When Hickson says something, you kind of listen to it.
Absolutely. Well, he's world class.
Yeah. So he talked for 40 minutes about that, and he went over scissor sweep for about 40 minutes. So out of that three-hour seminar, a lot of it was just talking about breathing and one, like the very first sweep you learn, like a scissor sweep. So
I mean, when Hickson says something, people listen. I mean, he's got sayings after him. I mean, it's always Hickson by arm bars. Yeah. It's not Kroll by breathing.
You know? maybe someday it'll be Kroll someday, by breathing.
But no, I mean, you'll listen to people at the highest levels of any sport or profession, and you'll hear the same things. They're just talking about a different activity. So you'll hear the same things. Focus on your basics. Focus on your breathing. Focus on your eating. All the stuff that isn't very sexy. So, I mean, you see, you know, like you'll see promo videos for UFC fighters or Bellator fighters or NHL players, and you'll see them doing all sorts of crazy workout things, but nobody really ever shows them just taking the time to learn how to breathe or to eat well or make sure they're sleeping 7-8 hours a night. I mean, nobody shows those things. Those are the things that aren't sexy, but at the end of the day, that's your foundation. That's how you till your soil so that your seeds will grow.
When you teach yoga, do you actually take the time to make sure everyone in your class is being in the correct position and not injuring themselves?
To the best of my ability. I mean, that's the problem when the classes get big. One of the key words we're going to be going over on Saturday at Western New York MMA is ownership. and it's making sure you own the position and you break it down as much as you need to own the position. Even if it doesn't feel as difficult, you still want to make sure you have that position locked in and you really own it. So, you know, I'll look around my class all the time, and if I see that people can't do something or they're really struggling with it for whatever reason, then you back it off. You give them a regression, something to break it down to make it a little easier.
Awesome. I know I went to a couple yoga seminars. Not seminars, but yoga classes. One at Gold's Gym and one at Bally's. And the classes were pretty big. And the teachers up on the podium, they're just really going over positions. Sometimes they're not even looking at the class. So is that kind of similar to how you run a class, or how do you run a class?
When I did teach at Bally's, I was up on a podium doing it like that. And, you know, it is difficult because you can't, you know, always get down to the class. I tried to come down, fix people and correct things, but unfortunately what you do is you end up losing people because you're so scattered in terms of, you know, you have real advanced people, real basic people, and, you know, it's one of those things where if you try to get to everybody, then you help nobody. So it is difficult at the larger box gyms. So, you know, the good thing about my space compared to, you know, something like the old Bally's on Robinson, which had a huge room, my studio is only 18 by 14. So I'm not fitting 35 people in there anyway. So the good thing is I can really help individual people out. So you're not going to get, you can't just hide in the back of the room.
Oh, man.
And I'm going to find you.
You found me at Bally's. You're like, you, yep. Professional athlete, you're doing it wrong.
Well, you know, but it was for your benefit. It wasn't to pick on you.
Right.
Right.
That sounds like picking to me.
Oh, come on now.
All right. We talked a lot about flexibility and strength in a lot of our private discussions. I had Ali Rex Happy in here. That's not really how you say his last name, but sorry, Ali. He says it crazy. I can't do it. And we had Alex, I don't know, C something, Castellano. Sorry, Alex. These guys got hard names to say. I can't be doing that stuff. I'm no professional. But they were talking about how they do stuff to increase their range of motion. And you had a great saying for this. I can't even really put it into layman's terms. But maybe you could break it down for us, how you build flexibility and then you make strength in that range of motion to increase it.
Well, here's the thing. Every joint in the body thinks that it's really normal. So if you stretch a joint to what you feel is your end range, you're going to get a neurological response where everything tightens up around it to protect the joint from going any further. So when you do that, then you start to inhibit your muscle and shut it down, which is going to decrease your strength when you get through a range of motion. So if that range of motion is not full, you're really limiting your strength. So, you know, if your arm can't extend all the way at the elbow, then you're going to lose a lot of strength because your body at the end points, whether it's really short or really long, is unable to produce the same amount of force as through the middle of that range. So the more you can develop your flexibility within reason, the more gray area you have to produce strength. So it's kind of a thing where the more length you have, the more optimal force range you can produce.
Right. So in my remedial squats, you have me increasing my range and then doing exercises to make strength in that range.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what you would do?
Yeah. So if I find a limitation in movement that I can change, sometimes you have a limitation you can't change, whether it's a pin in an ankle or an adhesion in soft tissue. But if you can change that range of motion, we're going to do so. And then once you gain some more range that you can control, I want you working in that range. So it really doesn't tend to stick and become part of your nervous system if you don't use it. So it's just like anything else. If you don't use it, you lose it. You know, one of the things I always go to is, you know, I almost always assess a deep squat in people. Doesn't matter how old they are. Unless there's a real particular reason I can't assess it, I always do the deep squat with the arms overhead. And, you know, I hear people all the time, they'll say, well, I'm 65. Or I'm 70. I'm like, that's cool. But, you know, you look at people in third world countries that are elderly and they can squat all the way down to the ground.
Because they don't got toilets, man. They need to poop somewhere.
Exactly. There's not a toilet interrupting them on the way down or a chair. So, you know, you look at pictures from third world countries, Southeast Asia, Africa. You can see people doing deep squats that are 60, 70 years old. So there's no age-related reason to lose mobility. It's usage-dependent. Mobility is one of the only things that's not age dependent. I mean, if you take a 14-year-old girl and you put her in a sling, take her arm, put it in a sling for 6 weeks, after 6 weeks, she won't be able to straighten her arm. It has nothing to do with her age. It was just slinged in one position. So,
I guess we should tell everyone before we get too much farther into this that not only are you teaching yoga, but you're also a personal trainer and you're also a physical therapist.
Yep.
So I want to make sure we get all this out before you just think this is the namaste guy telling you what to do.
No, it's yeah, I do have a doctorate in physical therapy. I have been doing fitness training since 2004 with people. I have my own business, Kroll Physical Therapy and Training, doing physical therapy, fitness training, and yoga instruction as well. So, yeah, I mean, it is coming from a medical background. I mean, I'm a medical professional. It's not just, yeah, someone saying, hey, man, do this. It's going to be cool.
Namaste.
So.
I don't even know what that means, but I heard on Grand Theft Auto, so I like it.
Well, you got the most powerful search engine in front of your face there. You can look it up.
Fanjuzi.com?
I don't know. Google might have something to say about that.
Yeah, maybe. All right, so we talked that you're a PT. Can you tell me a little bit about the movement screen assessments that you do for, you know, we've been through that and some of the stuff that you do when you work with athletes? Because you do work with a lot of athletes.
Yeah, so what I do is, you know, being a physical therapist, I always look at things from a background of the medical side first. I mean, you know, I heard this from Gray Cook, one of my mentors, that you always hear it called health and fitness. You never hear those terms in reverse because health comes first. So if you look at a pyramid, at the base of that pyramid is your health. So if I have a client coming up to me and, you know, that client, I take their blood pressure and it's 175 over 120, or they're breathing very heavy just talking to me, then they may not be healthy enough to go through even a movement screen, let alone, hey, maybe we should bust out the battling ropes or, you know, throw the kettlebell around today. I think maybe their health is sabotaged first. And then after that, up the chain is movement, and that's the one that gets skipped all the time. People go right into athleticism and strength training, and they skip the movement part. So, I mean, think of it this way. If we're going to train your squat and lunge, if we're going to train your push-up, if we're going to train your handstand, shouldn't we make sure you could actually do it first?
And do right? it correctly.
Right. So, I mean, you don't need to be a medical professional to know that when you see someone squat and their knee caves in, their ankle's all caved in, their body looks all contorted, that they're probably at a greater risk for injury. You don't need to be a medical professional to know that. In fact, I do that with people all the time when I talk to them. I'll do two different squats. One is a very good deep squat to the best of my ability, and another one is a terrible one. And I'll ask them which squat looks like you would get hurt doing it over and over again. And they unanimously, they'll tell me the bad one. So we can look at movement and make sure that it's okay. And that's what the screen does. The screen, I'm not hoping that I find something to fix. I'm hoping I don't. But at the same time, I got to check it first because, you know, if you start developing knee pain when we're working out, and if you start developing back pain or you just can't get over a hump in terms of increased mile time, push-up count, squat weight, whatever you're looking to do, then if you don't check their basic movement first, then you're going to run into all sorts of problems, making them better afterwards because they don't have the base of the pyramid to work off of. Just like, you know, if you have someone who is not losing weight the way they want to, you know, you're asking them questions. How are you sleeping at night? How's your stress levels? And if you find out that someone's sleeping 2 hours a night, they're in a terrible marriage, they're eating poorly, well, I can tell you right there, they're not going to lose weight. They're not going to get better if, you know, if that's what's going on. You know, it's sabotaging the whole thing. But I mean, really, it's, you know, 6 to 7 hours of sleep, and we won't agree on the number, but we know that 2 isn't good.
Right.
You know? You know, same with eating habits, same with hydration levels, same with stress. We, you know, we won't agree on what type of stress is good or bad or how much we can handle, but we all know that negative stress is going to sabotage our physical gains. So those are the type of health things at the bottom. But the movement screen that I do is a 15 to 20 minute screen that I run through 7 or 8 different movements. And I just want to see if you have a problem, what we can train and what we have to fix in order so you can train better. But it's really, it's not a matter of we train to beat the screen. We screen so that we can train. That's the point of it. It's not, okay, I just have to beat this screen. We don't care about that. The screen shows us what it shows us. We don't want to beat it. We just want to let honest answers come out of it so I can train you better.
Once you get through the screen, then you have a fitness style assessment that you do that the NHL teams and NFL teams use. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, the movement screen is what the NFL, the NHL, okay. The NBA use. It's the functional movement screen. And it's a 7-movement screen that they use, not to say, okay, this person's going to the Hall of Fame, this person's the best player in the draft. It just says, if we put this person through our training camp, the risk of their injury is going to go up. or we may not be able to train them to the best of their ability, so we have to fix this stuff on the front end. Or if you have two players that are really close that you're, you know, you're drafting 174 and you're looking at two different players, you may find this type of information to be useful, just like, you know, just like any other information. But it's just a fitness screen. It doesn't tell you what's wrong with them. It just tells you that, hey, they have a couple problems right here that may limit their ability to train.
And these screens, when you do a screen, it kind of shows what sports they play or which way, what activities they're really good at too as well, right? Like hockey players generally test differently than football players, and football players would test different than maybe an MMA fighter or something like that.
Not necessarily. It's not meant to be skill specific. It's meant to be a specific, honestly. Even when you go into further things like a capacity measure that I use, it's simple things like a carry, reaching with one foot, reaching with one arm. I mean, it has nothing to do with you being a hockey player or a basketball player. If it's scaled to your own body size, it's just meant to see, okay, can you squat? Well, I don't squat very often. I'm a hockey player. It doesn't matter. You should still be able to squat. So it's not, it's meant to be sport A specific for a reason, because everybody is an athlete first, and then you're a hockey player, then you're a dancer, then you're, you know, martial artist, you're whatever else after that. But again, on that triangle, you know, it's not like blood pressure for a health side of things is sport specific. It's not like, oh, you're an MMA fighter, your blood pressure should be higher, or oh, you're a hockey player, your blood pressure should be lower. It's you're a human being first, so then you're an athlete, then you're a hockey player.
Right. I was just thinking, like, the football players should be able to do the triple jump a little bit better. The track athletes should really be able to do it very well, you know?
Well, what type of football player?
I don't know.
Because there's big differences between wide receivers and linemen, right?
That's true.
So, again, it's all, that stuff is more specific. But, again, you're just looking to see, are they, in general, a healthy athlete? Not a good one, a healthy athlete. Okay? So, again, it's meant to be sport A-specific.
All right. Dr. Kroll knows what he's talking about. You can tell. Tom's just a caveman asking dumb questions, but that's all right.
No, they're good questions, because I do run to people who either want their kids or want themselves to do better. So they're like, well, because so-and-so is a soccer player, shouldn't she do really well at this? Or shouldn't we focus on this more? And the screen, no. I want to make sure she's a healthy athlete first. Then we'll work on the other stuff. But I really want to set the table for the coaches to do their job in terms of developing skill, because, you know, there's not many sports that I can really develop your skill at, because I'm not good at any of them.
Bowling.
Well, yeah, I can develop a little bit of skill in bowling, but there's people that are better than that, better than me at that. So I want to make you a good athlete. Let the coaches do their job after that. But that's really the point of it.
Do you work with any sports teams currently?
Not any sports teams per se, but a couple different athletes, mostly because I really do just private things with people. So a lot of the athletes will seek me out, or they'll be patients at one point with a non-contact injury. And I'm like, look, this could have been avoided. I mean, if you were, you know, if you were skating along and someone took out your knee or something, okay, that's a different story. But, you know, a lot of times when I see a non-contact injury, I usually feel that could have been avoided.
Yeah, I know you were trying to get in with some schools and stuff, and you're trying to educate a couple of parents groups from some of the schools. If anyone's interested in that, would they just contact you? Or are you interested in doing anything like that? Or
yeah, you know what? I'm always interested in that, because when what I see with the kids is that I see way too many of them getting injured with non-contact injuries. And I'm not even talking concussions or anything like that. I'm talking just a tweaked knee, a tweaked hip, an ankle sprain, repeated ankle sprain, low back pain. And it bothers me, because these are the kids trying to do the right things. They're not the ones that are just sitting around eating Doritos and playing video games all day. They're the ones that are trying to be athletic and trying to keep themselves in shape. And unfortunately, you know, there's only so many hours in a day. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, you and I are the same age, so we didn't have nearly as much stuff to do when we were kids. I mean, these kids are so busy now. I mean, I came home, did my paper out, played video games. We would fight for a while, but
just play football on the field. I mean, we did a lot of athletic stuff too. We were never. I'm still involved in kids' athletics today, and I see that kids' athletics is very skill based now. It's not like it. We used to just play and practice, and then when we were out of season, that was it. We did the next thing.
Yep.
Now these kids are doing, like, my son plays soccer 9 months out of the year at least, maybe more. And you see the guys in jiu-jitsu and MMA, they're training every day. That's what they're doing. That's what their kids are doing. Wrestling's going all summer long, all winter long now. Everything is being more skill based.
And you know what? I think we're losing something. It's you know, I'm not the first person to coin this, but it's organic movement. It's just going to a playground and playing around, doing the monkey bars, climbing stuff. Honestly, if you wanted to go through a really organic workout program, you could do it with a couple of simple things. Push, pull, carry, climb, crawl, kick. That's it. And doesn't matter how you do it. You know, you're pushing a tire around, pushing someone on a swing, pulling something, teeter-totter. I mean, these are, they're kid things, but they're really just organic movement. And I think if you saw more kids doing that instead of 9 months of soccer, maybe 6 months of soccer and 3 months of play, they would actually move a lot better, be a lot safer, avoid mental burnout, which a lot of them get from playing so long. And I think they would in general just be healthier and better at their sport. But it's so hard now because you have this this notion of, you know, continued returns on something where, okay, well, if my son wants to have a chance of playing, of getting a scholarship to play D1, or my daughter wants to play Division 3 or Division 1, you know, they have to keep going because, you know, everybody else is training. So if they're not training, they're falling behind, and it's difficult. But again, you know, the thing that'll sabotage your scholarship is getting hurt at 16 years old, not being able to play.
Does, say, starting at 8 years old, playing the same sport and doing the same repetitions over and over again impact your body negatively as opposed to helping you develop more skill? Are you putting a bigger toll on your body by playing that same sport for so long, doing repetitive motions?
Well, the big thing is risk. And, you know, like I say, everybody has a dose limit for what they can do in terms of how many pitches they can throw, how many kicks they can throw, how many, you know, how many miles they can run. It's not like you have a bank of this stuff, and once it's gone, it's gone. It's just a dose limit. So, you know, some kids may need 6 months off from a throwing sport. Some kids may be able to do it 9 months. So everybody's different. The problem is we tend to, you know, the parents and everybody else and the coaches, they tend to look at the outliers. Well, this person did it and they went to major leagues. Well, okay, they also were throwing 90 miles an hour at 15 years old. So they're just an anomaly. You know, you don't want to base your kids off of the outliers unless your kid truly is an outlier. You know, it's kind of hard to force your child to become an outlier in anything. You know, you can train more and more and more, but if they get burned out, they're going to resent the sport, and that's a problem. If they get injured, they're not practicing at all. So, I mean, you know, I've dealt with parents who are talking about having their sons and daughters going through surgery instead of taking rest, which to me is absurd.
You're a big proponent for not doing surgery if you can ever avoid it.
Well, that kind of makes it sound like I'm anti-surgery, and I'm not. Surgery is just one tool on the table. The difference between surgery and conservative measures, whether it's PT or chiropractic, acupuncture, or massage, the big difference is you can't go back from surgery. So if you have surgery on a knee or a shoulder, it's not 100% successful, and if there is a problem, well, you can't undo it. I mean, the likelihood that a PT or a chiropractor or a massage therapist is going to really harm you is really low. So, I mean, things may hurt where you're hurting for 2 or 3 days, but they're not going to harm you. And, you know, a surgeon, if the surgery doesn't go well, or if you don't do your rehab well, or if you're not smart afterwards, yeah, you may end up worse off. And now the rules have all changed because you've had something change inside your body.
Something changed. That's funny.
Well, it's what it is. It's making an adjustment to your body.
Maybe they took a kidney out that they weren't supposed to.
Right? I hope not.
I've been reading all these facts online, and one of the facts is when they put a new kidney and they usually don't remove the one that's in there. I was like, wow, that's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's my useless tidbit for today.
Well, I have no idea if that's true or not. But
caveman's learned it. I saw that on Facebook. It's got to be true.
Of course. Everything online is true.
That's true. I wanted to bring you in while I got you in here. I want to talk about some training aids, and mm-hmm. We were going to discuss a lot of the stuff that I do, other people do, and see what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with chiropractic measures. How much does that help you? How much does that hurt you? Does it do anything? Is it a scam? What's going on with chiropractic?
So, you know, here's another thing. So you're going to hear me say this all the time, that everybody responds differently to it. There's no one perfect way to do things. Almost all these things that we're going to go over have some benefit for somebody. Somebody will swear up and down that this is great and this works for them. You know, chiropractic, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, if you're just doing, you know, manipulation of the spine, manipulation of the joints, you can get a lot of benefit from that. A lot of what I feel manipulation of the spine and the joints are is you're taking a joint to an end range, which overloads the nervous system with information. So, you know, if you're to look down at your fingers and then you go to crack your knuckles, well, your fingers are different. They've all been broken. But if you look down at your fingers, see the position they're in, then crack your knuckles, look back down, they're in the same position. It's not like they were out or in the wrong spot and you put it back by cracking your knuckles. You're just taking that joint through an end range. And, you know, whatever the reason is neurologically, the body really likes that. Okay, so all the joints have tons of receptors in them and information that travels back to the brain that when you take it to its end point, it's usually not there. It's, I mean, it's usually, your finger's usually not in that position where it's really arched back or your spine's not twisted or rotated and moved to that end range position. So when it floods the brain with that information, the nervous system tends to really like it. We don't know exactly why. And anybody who says they know exactly the means that these things work is lying. We just don't know. But I do know that a lot of people do very well with chiropractors. In fact, I refer out to chiropractors sometimes when people aren't doing well with what I do.
And if you're going to go see a chiropractor, go see Dr. Brown at Dr. Brown Squared. I don't know where he's at now. He used to be at the gym, but he's a chiropractor I used to see, man. He's pretty good.
And one guy I refer to a lot, too, is Dr. Bill Brierley in Lockport. He doesn't do as much manipulative chiropractic as he does active release and soft tissue work. So he's someone I refer to a lot, and we communicate back and forth when we have shared patients. So it works out pretty well. But yeah, there's a lot of good chiropractors out there, a lot of good PTs, a lot of bad ones too. So it is what it is.
All right. Next one. How about the cryo freeze therapy? We go in there and you get froze up.
So, you know, there's been a little bit of an attack on icing and cryotherapy recently, more in theory than anything else, but there, you know, it's really limited as to how much cryotherapy can really help. So, you know, your idea is we're going to lower the inflammation response because it, you know, we don't move as well and it hurts when we're inflamed. But unfortunately, the inflammation response is there for a reason. So, you know, my belief is that the body tends to overdo the inflammation response at a joint, but it's still there for a reason. So when you take cryotherapy and you reduce the, you know, the blood flow that's going to a tissue, then you're reducing the oxygenation. Yeah, I'm getting my words all screwed up here. But, and then you're decreasing inflammation response, you're decreasing cellular respiration, collagen biosynthesis, you're decreasing all these things theoretically, and that slows down the tissue healing time. So it's good and bad. I mean, if you're in so much pain that you're having trouble moving, then it's something. Or if it's something you're doing through a fight camp to get you through to the next day, then it's something. So, you know, it's really the reduction in pain versus the slowing the benefits of inflammation. So, again, it's really debated how much cryotherapy actually penetrates into the body anyway. So the more fat tissue you have or adipose tissue, the longer you need to be held to it before that temperature drop goes through the skin, because it just takes longer through fat tissue. So it's really kind of hit or miss on that. I don't have anything against it. It's just, you know, you could potentially be slowing an inflammation response that your body needs.
You see the fighters do it all the time, and they say it takes out the lactic acid buildup and it takes out the soreness in muscles. Is that a fact, or is that superstition, or is that work body different?
I don't know if it's fact or superstition. I think that it's, again, you'll hear this a lot from me today too, that's a lot of sensory input going into the body. So our body in the skin and in the muscles and in the joints has a whole bunch of receptors that can detect pressure and vibration and cold and heat. So when you have a lot of cold coming in, that's a lot of sensory input going into the body. So you may feel like you can move better. You may feel like you have reduced pain. I don't know if it helps take up lactic acid and helps you move better after you're done. I don't know. I don't know what the research says on that, if there is any. But, you know, when you see high-end people doing it, when you're performing at a very high-end level, if something will help you 0.5% or 1%, then it may be worth it.
Yeah, 1% is a huge difference when you're talking about elite-level athletes, right? Honestly.
Absolutely, it is. So, you know, you saw the cupping thing with Michael Phelps in the last Summer Olympics, and, you know, then everybody got on the cupping for a little while, and it's just like, well, you know, if it works for him, you know, he's trying to shave a hundredth of a second, tenth of a second here and there. If it helps him, then that's fine. That small little difference, even if it's all psychological, matters to him. It may not matter for the rec athlete.
What about massage therapy?
So massage therapy, just like any other soft tissue work, not bad. I mean, if it can cause a release and tension of the muscle, so a muscle that's staying tensed up for no good reason, if it can cause a release in that, then it can help you move a lot better. I don't have a problem with massage therapy. I refer out to massage therapists all the time for things. So, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's not a scam or anything like that. It's just, you know, there's debate as to how much a PT or a chiropractor or an osteopath can actually manipulate soft tissue. So there's been some research out there that showed that even the strongest PTs and chiros can only manipulate a tissue length 1%, and it doesn't even stick. 5 years from now, we may find it to be completely false, but, you know, it's unlikely that we're changing real tissue length by digging an elbow or a palm into it, but it can reduce tone. So tone is when the muscle's tensed up for no good reason. So reducing that tone can be a beneficial thing.
When you do massage therapy and it just takes out the soreness in the muscle, is that a placebo effect or is it really relieving some soreness? I know you do some soft tissue work on me and mm-hmm. like when your neck's sore, you get your girl to rub it out and it mm-hmm. feels better, you know? What's the cause of that?
So, it could be a lot of things. So some of the soft tissue I work on you is, you know, making that muscle tense up, and then when you relax it, I'm taking advantage of a very small refractory period where it can't recontract, and then I'll move it a little bit further. So what I'm really trying to do is I'm trying to break a spasm or higher tone in a muscle. So when a muscle is contracting, again, for no good reason, the longer a muscle contracts, especially a bigger prime mover that's not meant to do that, the more it's going to get sore and painful. So when you can break that, you can take a lot of that soreness and pain away by breaking, you know, digging a tennis ball into the upper trapezius or into the lower back or anywhere where you have a knot, side of your leg or in your glute or anything like that. You can get that spasm and that tone to release, and it makes you feel a lot better.
I know this is a little off topic, but my wife gets these knots all the time too. What causes those muscle knots?
So a lot of times when you get a muscle knot, you know, I'll lay people down on the table and I'll put a finger in their upper trapezius or the end of their levator scapulae, which is another muscle. And they'll be like, oh yeah, that's the spot right there. And how do you know that was there? Well, it wasn't a guess. I mean, it's a usual suspect. So when you have poor positioning over time, certain muscles become elongated for a long period of time, or certain muscles try to tense up when they're not supposed to be doing so. So they try to elevate your shoulder for you, or they try to hold your head in position. And over time, that muscle, which is not designed to do that for a long period of time, gets a knot in there, and there you go. It's usually a muscle tensing up for no good reason or an inappropriate tension of a muscle for a long period of time.
All right. What about copper? You see the copper bands all the time. I see the stuff for ads on TV. They make braces with copper in them. Does that really help anything, or is that a scam? I think that's a scam.
I don't know if the copper actually does anything. I don't know if there's any benefit to it. Usually the sleeve and the bracing is just, again, more of a sensory input to the skin that makes it feel better. There's a little bit of support to some of the braces, depending on how tight they are, which can be beneficial. Some, I don't know if the copper helps. I've never told anyone to go get a copper brace. I use many other things other than copper. I'm not going to say it's a scam, but I don't know any reason why it would work. I haven't done any research on it, though.
So it's a scam. Don't buy any copper braces.
Like I said, I don't know if it works or not, but I use a lot of other things instead of copper.
So my knee bothers me sometimes. You've known my history with my knee. Mm-hmm. I wear a really tight neoprene brace that was made for like powerlifting, and it sticks really tight. Does that really help, or is that a placebo effect? What does compression do for like, you know, my joints that don't have any,
so compression
meniscuses or anything left?
Compression can provide a little bit of stability to a joint, which is beneficial. When you're providing an external stability to a joint, then the larger muscles don't have to turn on in terms of a stabilizing effect. So if you don't have to have the quad and the hamstring turning on at the same time to stabilize the joint, then they can go ahead and do other things, which is producing force for a squat or a lunge. So it can be helpful there. It could just be the rubbing against the skin of the brace. I remember when we were trying to do some push-ups on the jungle gym straps, and it was bothering your arm, the one you had surgically repaired. I put that wrap around it, and your push-ups came right back, and they were pain-free.
It wasn't even really a wrap. It was just like, it was like a rubber band, really.
Yeah, Dr. Religioso, he's another physical therapist. He sells these mobility straps, and that's what I used on you. And I didn't put it on tight. I just put it on. And just that, my belief is that sensory input from that helped you move a lot better, reduce the pain response. It didn't change any anatomy underneath the surface.
No, it was not supporting at all. It was not tight. There wasn't compression. It's just I could feel it around my arm, and it took the pain away. There was still pain there, but it took the major pain away.
Yep, and your technique improved a lot. So
we have that on a video somewhere.
Yep, I showed it to the UB students when we were out there that one day.
When they laughed at me?
Yes.
What about rock tape?
So kinesio tape is one of those things I use it a lot. I'm not beholden to any one brand. I tend to like the rock tape brand more than the other brands, but what does it really do? I mean, there's debate on it. My belief, again, is that it just changes the sensory input to the skin. There's always a placebo effect with every treatment you do. So, there'd be a placebo effect even to the tape if I did the taping to you versus, let's say, your daughter doing the taping to you. If she did it, it wouldn't have as great of an impact as when I do it because you trust my medical knowledge, you trust the reasons I'm doing it, and you trust my technique. So I think for most treatments that I do with tape, it's just changing the nervous system input around it. So it's the nice thing is it stays on 3 to 5 days, so you can get a long-lasting change in that input bombarding the nervous system, which tends to break tone and change different things in the body, the way you move. I know we did it with you for some of the keloiding around your scar where it was getting real bumpy.
Right.
And, I don't think there was a placebo effect there because, one, you didn't buy it.
No.
You're like, you're going to do what? Yeah. Okay, dude, whatever.
I was like, I don't think this stuff works.
So I put the tape on and I told you that, we're trying to create pressure gradients where there was higher pressure where the tape was, no pressure where there was no tape, et cetera, back and forth. And that would help smooth out some of the bumpiness. And you're like, whatever, dude, it's your tape. Yeah. Do whatever you want. And 3 days later, it was flat.
When I woke up the next morning, it was gone.
So
after having it there for days.
So I use stuff like that for changing, the way fluid moves around or the way the skin behaves. But most of the treatments I do are sensory. And it's not even my first go-to treatment. I remember I had one woman, she was getting bad cervicogenic headaches, which are headaches that originate from the neck. And working with her for 2 or 3 weeks, and she was getting better, but not the level that I was really happy about. So I told her, we're going to try a kinesio tape application. So I started right at the end of her hairline, and I worked it down her upper back. And I wasn't confident that I was going to make a huge change, but I thought maybe if we can break a little bit of tone, I can maybe go a little further in some of the other movements. She came back in 3 days later and said she hasn't had headaches since. I was like, all right. And we took it off, and 2 weeks later, I still haven't had a headache. Okay, results not typical, but she didn't expect it to work. So.
And that was a rock tape brand?
That was the rock tape brand. But
all right, another shameless caveman plug.
But I do have other patients who don't like the rock tape brand, and they use other tape ones because they're either cheaper or they like the way it feels more. They're all fine. I think rock tape tends to be the meatiest one and stays the best for most people.
I currently have some on my shoulder right now that you applied on Wednesday. Today is Sunday.
Uh-oh.
It's still hanging on strong after a tournament and multiple showers. It is doing well. I don't really feel like it actually helps my shoulder too much except for teaching me to keep my shoulder in the same place. Mm-hmm. I feel the tape on me all the time, and I think about the tape, and I think about you, keep my shoulders in a proper position.
Yep.
And even if it's just psychological, it tends to help the shoulder pain just by doing that.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate that. What do you think about regular athletic tape, just taping up the joints?
That's mostly supportive because the tape, unlike the kinesio tape, which Rock Tape is a brand of, the athletic tape doesn't really move. So you're more or less taping a joint for either support or holding something in place, reinforcing a position. So a lot of times people use that athletic tape for after they mobilize a joint, they'll tape it up to sort of reinforce that and maintain that mobility over time. I don't use the athletic tape too much because I'm not dealing with people at the site of injury. So, I don't run onto the field and take care of them when they're hurt. So I usually see them 3 or 4 days later.
Right.
So I use the rock tape more than the athletic tape if I can avoid it.
You've taped me up a couple of times. It worked out pretty all right so far.
Yep.
For a couple of events.
Mm-hmm.
I got some questions that are going to be brought to you by fandoozy.com through the Caveman website. Allie Nicole wants to ask, does tool-assisted soft tissue mobilization work?
So in my world, it's called IASTM, instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization. The most popular brand name for it is the Graston technique.
Yes, that's actually what she sent me the website link to that as well.
Yeah, it's the most popular name for it. I do it a little differently than the way they do it. So I'm not saying their way is bad, but one of the ways I was taught was to take the tool and really beat the hell out of someone with it. You know, you're trying to bruise them up. You're trying to get more blood flow to the area to make things heal. You know, the more I talk to people like Dr. E, who's a little bit of a mentor of mine, PT-wise, you know, he went through the transition from beating the hell out of people with the tool to going really, really light on people. So I made that change because you beat people up and you bruise them. Some people aren't coming back. I mean, they don't like that. Not everybody is someone who says, yeah, it needs to hurt all the time. I go really light on it, 90 seconds or so, and then I have them try a movement again. And usually just that change in sensory input will make them move a lot better and reduce their pain. So I kind of use it as a guide. Okay, so can I break some tone with just doing rubbing a little makeup remover, Albaline type stuff on their back with a steel tool, and then they move better? Okay, wash it off, tape it, and then they usually can maintain that movement. But yeah, I just do it a lot differently. It's good stuff. I just don't feel the need to beat the hell out of people with a tool. Honestly, if you take someone and you start putting a painful stimulus to their body, a lot of times they'll tense up even more. So
we actually talked about that earlier when you said that PTs and chiropractors can't make too much of an effect with their hands. What about when they use a tool? Does that change that at all? Or is it
not really?
You can't do it hard enough injuring someone.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The skin and the tissue is so good at dispersing force that, you know, you dig into it with a tool. I mean, unless you're going to break the skin or, you know, cause a lot of bruising, which, you know, probably isn't going to make the athlete move too much better the next day. I just go real light. There's some people that swear up and down by going really hard, or when someone wails on them with a tool and they're all bruised across their IT band or their lateral or outside quad. They love it. They feel better with it. They move better with it. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of benefit to some people beating you up with it, but I just do it really light, and I do it for a very short period of time. And if I don't make the change that quickly neurologically, then I don't think 5 extra minutes and some reddening of the tissue is going to really change it. At least I haven't seen it in my own practice. So I go really light with it.
Awesome. So you're not going to bring the wrong kind of clientele into your place.
Well, it's not the wrong kind. It's just, you know,
I was talking about the S&M kind, but not...
Oh, well, you know.
I was not saying that Allie Nicole is the S&M kind of girl, but I don't know about this girl. She could be a little different.
I don't even know her, so...
I don't really know her either, but she hangs out with Scott Skinner, so she might be trouble. Just kidding, guys. All right, I have another one from Mans Rogers, who is a multiple marathon girl, MMA fighter, does jiu-jitsu. She says, I use all the recovery methods, cryo, Cairo, active release, PT, dry needling, massage, acupuncture. Can you ask what he feels is the most efficient? Actually, we haven't talked about, what's active release?
So active release is the stuff that Dr. Bill Brierley does, where, you know, he'll dig into an area and either he'll move your tissue or he'll have you move your tissue, and it's sort of to release tone or tension or a adhesion in the tissue. Again, I don't know if it's really releasing an adhesion, but that's the idea of it. It's pretty painful. It's pretty aggressive. So that's what active release is. Dry needling is a sort of a form of acupuncture where you're putting a needle into a trigger area. PTs can't do it in New York State, so I don't know how to do it. I mean, I can go get trained, but I can't do it in the States, so I'm not going to bother. So you just have to go to an acupuncturist for that. I don't know if there's... I like to get away from the terms best and worst. So to the question of, you know, which is the best, which is the most efficient, which is this, which is that, it all just depends on how you respond to it. If you have a chiropractor that you work with, and let's say you go to her once a month and your rapport is so good, you're able to relax so well when she does her manipulations that you just feel a ton better, then chiropractic with that person is the right answer for you. If kinesio tape works really well for you, then kinesio tape's the answer for you. These things are all just tools in the toolbox. None of them is any better or worse. They're just different, and they're good for different people. They're good for different things, and it's all about how you respond to it. So, you know, just because the evidence may not be good for something. So let's say you go onto Google Scholar and you start looking up some evidence and it says, oh, geez, you know, kinesio tape is only shown to be effective in 15% of these athletes. Well, it was still effective in somebody. It's like, I mean, I wouldn't go home and throw out all my Torque head screwdrivers because I only use them 10% of the time, right? I mean, it's useful for something.
That's a cool analogy.
it's useful for something. So it's just a tool that you may not use all that much, but again, it's still a tool in the toolbox. So every athlete, every individual is different, and you're going to find that some people do really well with medications and pharmaceuticals, other people with chiropractic manipulation, other people with just 5 to 10 minutes of stretching or yoga or Pilates or something that gets them feeling better. And it doesn't matter what it is, everybody's going to be different. So I know it seems like kind of a cop-out. I'm not saying, well, this is the best, but it's just not the way it is.
So if you want to become the best, I will recommend you to be the best if you send me a check to Caveman's Corner.
So it's, yeah, there's a whole bunch of different techniques out there. None of them are better or worse. There's just some have better evidence behind them. Some rely more on placebo effect than others. So
how does acupuncture actually work?
I don't exactly know. So you can put a bunch of needles in, and you know, when you go to an acupuncturist, it's not like they're digging a needle deep inside of you. Sometimes they put it really light, just a little bit underneath the skin. And I don't know exactly how it works. They have meridians and all sorts of things that I'm not well educated in. Again, it could be a lot of just sensory input to the area that's changing things. I don't really know. It's not a big area of study of mine.
I'm kind of interested in that. I never would let someone stick me with a bunch of needles. Seems like cheating.
It all depends what's, you know, past the needle that's going into you.
That's right.
Is the needle a tool, or is it just a transport mechanism for something? If it is, then just, you know, make sure you pee clean.
Pee clean. Yeah, guys, always pee clean. All right, so you kind of have your own business model going on with your Dr. Kroll PT business. You don't accept insurance, and you do follow all the New York State laws, correct?
Well, yes, because, you know, I'm a licensed professional, so I have a scope of practice as defined by the Board of Professions in New York State. So again, even though I don't take insurance and I don't really work off referral, I still can't do dry needling. Doesn't matter. I mean, I could lose my license if I do stuff like that. So I still am bound by, you know, the Board of Professions and what is my scope of practice. But you know, my business model really works at, you know, I kind of sat down and thought, what are the things that get in the way of patient care? What are the things that get in the way of me doing my job? So obviously there's myself and my limited skill. So what do I do about that? Well, it's continuing education. It's more experience. It's exposing myself to new and better people. So I try to take care of that side of things as much as I can. But then I look around at what else gets in the way. And one of the big things I came up with was insurance. You know, ran into people that, you know, they'd be authorized for 8 or 10 visits, or, you know, to actually take insurance, you almost have to hire a staff to deal with all the insurance stuff. Well, if they're Medicare, how many PT visits have they already had? How much cap do they have left? Do they have an authorization? You know, we have to bill this appropriately. You know, all this stuff goes into dealing with insurance companies. And like I said, you almost have to hire someone to do it. So as soon as you hire someone, that increases your overhead, and then it makes it harder and harder to see just one patient at a time. Also, you'll have people that'll, you know, have insurance, and insurance will say, yeah, you can't come no more. And that's not really appropriate, because the insurance company, and this is why I tell my patients all the time, insurance can never tell you you can't get PT. All they can tell you is they won't pay for it. So, but that's not how the patient sees it. The patient sees it as, well, I only had 12 authorized visits, so they said I don't need it anymore. Well, no, they have an MBA. I have a DPT. Let the medical professional decide when you don't need it anymore. So I kind of took insurance out of the equation. And the interesting thing is, with the way people's deductibles are and copays for specialist visits, it's usually cheaper to go see a physical therapist private pay, because you get better care. You're usually seeing less visits. I mean, so I save you time, and I save you money, and I save you, and I give you a better product. You just, you pay a little bit more versus a $35 or $45 deductible. It's crazy. I actually put a video up on my Facebook page at Kroll Physical Therapy going over all this and breaking it down in terms of money that you're spending up front seeing me versus the amount you would spend, you know, at 18 visits at a PT clinic, and then how much time I save you. And it's hours and hours of time. in terms of travel and then time in the visit, and you get a better quality product at the end anyhow.
I know seeing you personally, it saves me a lot of time. I was seeing a PT. I won't even say where I was going, but I was seeing a PT. I go there. I wait in a waiting room for probably about an hour. Then I see the PT for about 10 minutes of my hour time that I was in there. So that's 2 hours of my time for really 10 minutes of hands-on PT, plus a drive there and back. And they were only open during hours when I was working. So on top of my $25 copay to see the PT, I'm losing 2 hours of work. So, you know, say I make $33 an hour, that's, you know, $66 plus the $20 or $25 for the copay, so you're looking at $91 pretty much.
Well, even if you make nothing per hour, your time is still valuable.
Well, then it was $200 I wasted.
I mean, it's still your time is still valuable. If I said over the course of the next 6 weeks I could save you 9 hours of time, could you find something to do in 9 hours with a 9 hour block of time? Of course you could.
If I could sleep 9 more hours a week, I'd probably be up to 21 hours a week.
Right? So it's, you know, you can do a lot with time. Time is an incredibly valuable resource. So, and on top of that, the quality of the product. So if you're only getting 10 minutes of your PT's time, that's not really that good. And if they're just giving you semi-supervised exercise, or they're telling you to do your own home exercise program in the clinic, that's oxymoronic. The first word of that statement is home. So it should be a home exercise program that you don't do at the clinic. Yeah, my patients, they never come in and just do their home exercise program. I check it to make sure that it's going well. But, yeah, you're not going to sit there and do your home exercise program in my clinic and while I type on my laptop. It's absurd.
That's one thing I really liked about seeing you, too. I come to see you. I tell you whether I did exercise or not. Like the other week, I was like, man, I did not do one of those exercises they told me to do.
But it's okay. I'd rather have someone be honest about it than... Because I'm going to know anyway.
Right. What I used to get from the other places, I had a six-page pamphlet, and they just had highlighted what I'm supposed to do. And then I'd go there, and I'd do that. You give me a lot of exercises. I'm like a professional athlete. When I look at some of these remedial exercises, I'm like, I can do this hurt, you know? And you give me the correct exercise to work on to actually help what my problem areas were, whether it be my squat, when I tore my bicep, my shoulder problem I'm having, my bicep problem I have on the other side.
You know whatever. What? One thing I told the students, and I don't know if you were in this class when I taught the UB students at this. You know, one of the questions I asked the students, what are 5 or 6 good treatments for plantar fasciitis?
I was there for that one. You were there for that one. Yeah, this is going to tell it, though.
And so the students were running through things, and I was kind of helping them out. So I'm like, they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to work on ankle dorsiflexion. So dorsiflexion mobilization with movement. We're going to do some Graston or IASTM to the plantar fascia itself. We're going to give them a 3-way calf stretch from Gary Gray. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And I said, okay, so you got 6 things that are seemingly really good treatments for plantar fasciitis. And they're like, yep. I'm like, okay, why bother seeing the patient? I mean, if you already know what you're going to do, then why interview the patient? Why do a subjective history? Why ask them how they're feeling, what their problem is? If you already know what you're going to do, then just accept the fact that you're not giving them personalized care. You've already decided what they're going to get. So if you get a 3-page pamphlet from your PT that has exercises highlighted, is that personalized care? No, it's just it's playing odds and percentages. It's saying, okay, they have a shoulder problem. These things tend to help, so let's have them do these. That's not good care.
Is that insurance-driven, or is that just trying to rush people through?
Well, I think the two are hand-in-hand. I don't think the insurance company says you have to give them these cookie-cutter exercises. That's not how that works. But what happens is when you take insurance, you have overhead. And when you have overhead, you can't, you know, you can't get by seeing one patient at a time. Not in Western New York. Some places in the country you can because the insurance reimbursement is better. But in Western New York, you're not doing it. So that's a matter of stacking patients. So, you know, when a person walks into a PT clinic, they see a couple of nice people at the front desk. They see a really nice looking building. It's clean. It's professional. It's got these nice lights. And they have 14 tables to work on patients. And they see all this equipment, and they're blown away by it. They say, okay, this place has their stuff together. This place is going to help me. And I walk in there, and I see a completely different view. And it's the view I try to share with my patients. So, you know, patient walks in, sees 2 nice people at the front desk, going to help them out and do all the scheduling. they think, wow, that's great. They have a good front office staff that's going to be nice and take care of me. I see those are two people that aren't generating revenue. So all the PTs are subsidizing their revenue. So they don't generate revenue, but they're costing the company salary. So someone's got to pay for it. Let's go into the PT clinic. Wow, I see 14 tables. This looks great. But on their website, there was only 4 PTs. So you don't need more than 4 tables unless each PT is seeing 3 patients an hour. So the patient sees, wow, a lot of tables. This is great. I see stacking patients. So then they see all this equipment, a new step, three bikes, all this other stuff. And the patient says, wow, they have all the equipment that's going to help take care of me. I see, well, throw them on the bike for 10 minutes while I finish up with this other patient. That's what I see.
That's what happened to me when I was rehabbing my ACL.
That's exactly what happened.
There was 5 of us in there, and we're all on pieces of equipment, and the 2 PTs were both on their computer. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? I can do this in my own gym. I don't need to be here.
Absolutely.
And I stopped going. I went twice, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
It was stupid.
Yeah, that's how it goes in a lot of clinics. And I'm not saying nobody ever gets better at a standard PT clinic, because people do. There's very good PTs there, and there's some that aren't as busy as others, and the therapists really do a good job. So I'm not damning all of them. I'm just saying that the environment is not set up for them to succeed.
I'm kind of basing on myself as well. I mean, if I didn't know exercises, or I didn't have the drive to exercise myself and needed someone to push me, or I wasn't really sure how to do the exercise in the first place, I'm sure it would help. But we're experienced athletes. Most of anyone that listens to this is, you know, probably been in a boxing ring or a cage or at least on some sort of physical fitness, or they wouldn't be listening to me.
Right.
Otherwise, they'd be like, who's this dummy, you know? Maybe one of your friends will listen, and they'll be like, I don't do any of that stuff. But
maybe my classmates. My classmates from school.
But when I see you, it's not the same thing. It's not a cookie-cutter approach. And I know I said this a few times already, but I just want to stress, if you're going to go see Dr. Kroll, it's definitely worth at least seeing him once and checking it out.
Yeah, you know, it's... I always tell people I'm not greedy about this. If someone doesn't come in, or if I don't see someone twice a week, I don't lose my house. So I tend to see people maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks. It all depends. I mean, I have one patient, she's post-surgical right now, and I'm seeing her once every 3 weeks. And I did objective measures on her, and they all got better by 15% after a 3-week absence. So I didn't need to see her twice a week for those 3 times like other clinics would have wanted to do. So... you know, if people do their own work, they're going to get better. If they don't do what you tell them to, then seeing them more often isn't going to change anything. They're not doing their own work.
I really only associate with people I like and trust. I trust Chris from Fanduzzi. I like him, I guess. Even though he could use a little more exercise. Even though it's his birthday, I'm going to throw him under the bus a little bit. He could use some Dr. Kroll PT. But you're one guy I truly believe, and you say what's on your mind, and... if someone doesn't need to see you, you're going to tell them, I don't need to see you. You're good.
Yep.
And not only that, you gave me the exercise to work at home, and you're like, if you do this, it'd be all right. And then when I don't do it, it's my fault. But, I mean,
well, one
they
of the,
definitely help.
It's a really simple idea in terms of treatment. I do a hands-on technique on you, and then I see if it changed anything. If it made you better, or made you move better, or decreased your pain, or decreased whatever your chief complaint or any complaint was, then... I try to give you a way to do that on your own. If you can, then I give it to you to do on your own. We check it again, make sure it didn't make you worse. Oh, it made you feel even better? Okay. If you're not going to do it then, you know, what's the chance of you doing with any PT, right? So, you know, I tend to show people that this is going to make you better. It's not all theoretical. Like, oh, hey, we should be doing this because, you know, this one piece of research said that holding a 60-second plank is good for low back pain. Well, is it changing anything? That's kind of what I do. I always show people that this is making you better right away. And if it did, then the likelihood they're going to do it at home goes way up.
So if anyone has some long-lasting nagging injuries, that's the kind of stuff that you look into, right? You don't need to have, like, a serious medical problem or...
No, and it, you know, it's... PT is one of those things where, you know, we always look at it as a reactive thing, and... I look at it as trying to be more proactive. So if you've had a nagging injury, if you've had a nagging problem or whatever, I mean, I can help you take care of it to the best of my ability. But honestly, you should be letting someone see you every couple months just to make sure that you're not screwing yourself up. And we do it with dentists all the time. We have no problem going to see a dentist every 6 to 12 months. Not because our teeth hurt. We don't walk in going, oh, doc, my teeth hurt. No, you don't do that. You walk in there and you say, oh, yeah, I'm here to get my checkup and have the hygienist and dentist look at you. And the dentist will say, okay, well, you have a little bit of bleeding here when we were flossing for you. You should be flossing more. We can tell that you're not. And here's some buildup behind your teeth near your gums. Okay, I'll get it done. You're not going there because, hey, doc, my teeth are falling out. You go there so they don't fall out. You don't go there because your teeth are in pain. You go there so they don't get into pain. And the same thing should be for PT. And we just don't do it yet. It's always a reactive thing.
Do you think that'll ever happen with insurance? Because they're going to lose their asses on that, kind of.
Well, no, they're going to save on that. Because if I can catch someone who's exposing their knee and their ankle and their hip to unnecessary stress over the course of years, then I can save them potentially a hip replacement, a knee replacement, an arthroscopy. I mean, all those things aren't cheap. So actually, they'll win. And that's how dentists and everything got these annual screens in the first place, by showing, look, you're going to win. If you pay for these things, it's cheaper in the long run. You know, I'm fighting an uphill battle on this, and I know I am, but it's a message I believe in, so I keep putting it out there. And, you know, if I can help five or six different people over the course of a couple of years, then great.
Is this a movement in your field, or is this kind of a personal crusade?
It's a mini movement in our field. There's some people that really want to do it this way, but, you know, a lot of people, they just want to go to work, do their thing, and then go home. They're not interested in changing anything. They're just like, look, this is my profession. I can't change it anyway. So, you know, it is what it is. I don't fault them for it. It's just, you know, not everybody is meant to take up the fight, because it's not an easy fight. It really isn't. I mean, you know, my business is hard. When I work for someone else and a patient no-shows, it's kind of good, because now I can catch up on paperwork. I can do this. I can do that. When a patient no-shows at my business, it sucks.
Yeah,
because it's mine, right? So, you know, it is what it is. Not everybody wants to take up the fight, and not all PT is neuroorthopedic like I do. You know, there's PTs that work in nursing facilities and hospitals and home care and pediatrics and work for schools. That they're in a different world than I am. So, it, you know, it's just, in my world, things should change, but it's going to take a long time.
So for people that are listening, that listen to you or are interested in what you're talking about, who are the leaders in the field of this MPT leading the way
for
this kind of...
Nationwide, you're looking at people like Gray Cook. He's probably the big one in terms of this stuff. Locally, you're looking at people like Dr. Urson Religioso and Chris Nentars and myself are three of the ones that I know that are doing this and have the same type of message. So those are the people locally that I would refer to. If you know, there was a group I wanted to get together, those would be the other two guys I would get. But yeah, Gray Cook's the one globally who's more of the this is what we should be doing.
All right. Preventive maintenance would be a great way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who's running the big insurance companies, but you should get a hold of them.
Well, and what I have to do and what I am doing over time is I'm trying to develop data. You know, I'm trying to develop data on people that I'm working with more from a fitness and preventative side of things. And in fact, I did have one client who I was just seeing her. I see her weekly for fitness, nothing crazy. You know, she's in her 60s and she was complaining to me of knee problems and then shoulder problems and then hand problems. Her fingers were hurting. And she had gone to see her neurologist, and the neurologist wrote her a script for PT. So she told me about it, and I said, this really isn't appropriate. I said, if it was just knee problems, I mean, I've been seeing you for years. You've never had a complaint of joint pain other than maybe a little low back pain intermittent. So, you know, she's been seeing me for years, and she would have gotten 6 weeks of PT where she was, you know, riding a bike or riding an elliptical or maybe even going in a pool, getting some hands-on treatment. And I said, you know what? I've been seeing you for a long time. None of this adds up to me. Let me write you a medical note, and I want you to go see your primary care physician. So she said, okay. So she went to see the primary care physician. The primary care physician did a whole bunch of blood work on her and found some inflammatory processes were running out of whack throughout her whole body. I mean, when you have knee pain, then shoulder, and then hands, it's not likely that all those things went awry in one shot. I mean, maybe for you.
Thanks.
But, you know, in her case, no. So by doing that, she got on the right medication, she got the right stuff that she needed, and she was feeling better in 2 weeks. So that's the benefit of having basically a PTN retainer that sees you regularly, that they can say, you know what, this isn't an orthopedic concern. There's something bigger going on throughout the body that we need to get checked. And that would not have happened had I not written that note. So
that's awesome. You know, that's a great story.
Those are the type of things that, you know, are really, that's what your preventative care is about.
Do you ever talk to UB? I mean, I know you do a lot of work with them. Maybe they could do some kind of research on that. Someone could do, you know, PhD thesis or something on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because you're looking at long-term historical data. I mean, you know, you have to take people that go through an annual screen and then you have to follow them for years and give them questionnaires years and years later that, okay, have you had an injury? Well, yeah, no, and is that group, you know, doing better than average? So it's a long process for that.
That's super interesting. I know most people are probably falling asleep right now, but I'm super interested by that.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's really just about making people not become patients. If I never saw a patient again and I only saw people for preventative and fitness stuff, I'd be as happy as could be. You know, it's as much as I like the problem solving orthopedically, it's, you know, I'd rather people not be patients in the first place because I don't see many reasons for it other than trauma, to be honest with you.
Okay, I got one last topic that I didn't have on our little thing that I had set up for us because I always got to throw you a curveball. So 90% of the people I talk to all have lower back pain dealing, especially in my field and working mechanics and machinists and that type of field. What's some good stuff to take care of lower back pain?
Well, here's the thing. So lower back pain, for me to say do this, 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 and this is really irresponsible. Okay, because I don't know what the cause of your low back pain is. So if you have low back pain that's organ-related, boy, is it really irresponsible for me to tell you just to do repeated extensions because you're probably leaning forward the most. The first thing I would tell people, if you're in a position where you're a mechanic or a machinist or something, take a look at your day and see what type of postures and positions you're in the most, and then break that up. That would be the first thing I would tell you. So if you're hunched over a lot, stand up straighter. Take frequent breaks on that stuff. Break up those long-term positions because that's probably what's hurting you the most. If you're doing repetitive lifts, not necessarily heavy, but just repetitive from floor to waist or from floor to overhead or even from waist to overhead, you know, what's your technique look like? How are you doing that? If you're doing it poorly, then basically you're taking the part of your day that you're doing the most, and that's where you focus your energy on. So if you're a mechanic and you're hunched over a hood, well, if you're spending, of your 40-hour work week, you're spending 32 hours hunched over a hood, that's probably a good place to start in terms of let's break this up and see how that goes. But in terms of here, do these three or four exercises, that would be really irresponsible.
Got me again. Smart guys.
But yeah, just take that part of your day that you're doing the most and break it up. And that's really any problem solving. I mean, it's not a PT thing. It's any type of problem. If let's say you notice behavior change in your son and he's hanging out with with Charlie more throughout the week.
Yeah.
Now he's hanging out with Charlie, the new friend he made in school when he switched schools, and his behavior changed. You're going to be like, he's spending a lot of time with Charlie. I wonder what's going on there. You'd focus your problem solving on the biggest thing in his life right now.
Right.
So it's just the same thing with PT. I'm focusing on what are you doing the most throughout the day? Can we break that up and change it?
Smart.
So,
all right, you got anything to plug while you're in here?
Just my Facebook page, Kroll Physical Therapy, or at Kroll Physical Therapy for Facebook, and my website, KrollPhysicalTherapy.com. You know, there's links to other professionals and groups that I like Western New York MMA and Fitness, so, you know, check them out too. But yeah, just check some of the videos out and come in and see me. And honestly, whether you're just trying to become more athletic, you're training for something, you're want to take care of a nagging issue, just look to see what I have to offer there and give me a call. And it's no pressure. If you come in, you come in. If you don't, you don't. But at least give me a shout out and a talk to, and we'll see if it's a good fit and we can help you out.
Awesome. If you're listening to this on Podbean, check out from what he said. If you check this out through my Facebook, I'll have the links on it. If you're watching this on YouTube, I will put the links into the video feed and also at the bottom of the page. So depending on how you're watching or listening to this, I will have links the best I can to Dr. Kroll. And I think that's all we got going on right now.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. From the Fan Doozy Studios in Buffalo, New York, we're out of here.
You got Butterbean in 2.5 hours, huh?
Yeah, hopefully we get him.
Nice.
If Ray doesn't fail again. We're supposed to have that lingerie football league girl. She gave Ray the wrong number.
You think that was intentional?
Probably. Oh, that's going to be a good Easter egg. I got you, too.
Yeah, me?
Recording.
Oh, boy. That's okay.